And I see Eric's here. Judy signed off, but might be joining back in a second. Let's see. I'll share my screen.
Hello.
Hi, sorry about this. This is Judy. Apparently, we're having some internet issues here. So I was on, and then I couldn't connect, and then on again and couldn't connect. So I'm going to be a dial-in girl today.
Okay. Well, we can hear you loud and clear now. Sorry about your connection challenges.
No problem. It's been great all day until, of course, we're going to have a Zoom call.
Well, I have a dog barking in the background that hopefully will calm down. Got the door. If he keeps barking, I will go try to calm him. But
hey, no problem. I'm a dog mom, so don't worry about that.
All right.
Very good. I just wanted to announce and say, yeah, I'm here. I made it.
Great.
I do have a question, though.
Sure.
If this is okay, I was zooming in a little. I actually started this whole process about quarter till. And when I put the ID in, it wasn't accepting the ID. And is that because there was another meeting in progress ahead of ours?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. And then closer to the meeting time, I got in. But then our internet started acting up, too. So I'm like, okay.
It may
just
be
curious.
When the meeting is actually made available. So Bill facilitates them in terms of he's the main host that opens it up for us. So
okay.
He may have had a meeting previous to this.
Okay, no problem with that. I was just curious.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure if Christine or Michelle will be able to join us. I didn't get any word from them, so I'll go ahead. Oh, Michelle's. Oh, great. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. Sorry, I have to take a kid to soccer practice, so I'm driving.
All right. again, apologies on the late actual calendar invite. I know that emails, okay, you're kind of aware of things happening, but sometimes needing to have that actual appointment makes a difference. So thank you for being available. I'll go ahead and get started today and we'll finish up by five so you can go back to your regular life. Okay, so... So I wanted to today focus on our public outreach efforts, the virtual workshop that we had earlier in November, and then the barrier surveys that closed that I have reviewed and kind of summarized findings for. We'll also look at some of the current activities and update you on what's been happening with the parks and building evaluations. And unless we have any other public participants, that can just be time to discuss what you guys observed. And then we'll also talk about scheduling these meetings into 2021. So the virtual workshop held in early November on the 5th, there were 11 people on the virtual workshop. Only two were participants that were not affiliated with either project team staff or this advisory group. However, those two participants were very helpful in identifying problematic locations. One location that came up was the mobile park and carriage court for some problematic sidewalks and curb ramps. One of the things that we discussed with that participant was that the city is only responsible for the public right-of-way. So some of these problematic areas at Mobile Park are on private property. So that's outside city jurisdiction. Another location was Highway 9 north of SR 20. Someone observed curb ramps without tactile pads. Those could actually be curb ramps with older pads that are at an older standard. So that's one location. Thanks to Matthew, he identified Ferry Street near the old Heritage Bank that tree roots are a problem for his bicycling and also would be a pedestrian hazard.
Mm-hmm.
And another location, State and Township. This was identified as a high priority location by the end of the workshop because there are missing curb ramps and pedestrian crossings. And we'll see this location at State and Township come back in the other online survey findings.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, Bennett Street, another location for uneven sidewalks.
Jennifer?
Yes?
I'm sorry, is the tattoo pad different from the yellow bumps? I thought they called it like a blended. I thought they called it something else, a blended something. Is the tattoo pad different from the yellow bumps?
Oh, okay. Tactile pads is another name for those truncated domes or also detectable warning surface.
Detectable warning surface, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's referring to the same concept of some type of physical warning that the crossing is coming.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take 1 second to call my dog and I will be right back. So
no problem.
Not bark anymore. Once you can, thanks for your patience. 1 second.
Gotta love those dogs.
My apologies. Thin doors do not keep a door or dog.
No problem.
Okay. The online surveys, we had a lot more participation, 28 responses. The vast majority were on SurveyMonkey, and we just had a couple on Survey 123. Some general observations were, some general observations from SurveyMonkey had to do with one person asking about trail design, wanting to make sure that trails were designed for pedestrians, equestrian users, as well as persons with disabilities. Another person mentioned just a general desire for maintenance and obstacle clearing, but weren't specific about any types of obstacles or locations. So that's sometimes a challenge with getting feedback that's generic. Another person talked about traffic signal phasing and timing. There are standards and then recommended guidelines that are kind of optional for how many seconds a pedestrian crossing lasts for mm-hmm. the pedestrian phase. And mm-hmm. someone brought that up. There's also a variety of sidewalk barriers that came up, cracks, lack of ramps on the sidewalks, as well as lack of sidewalks themselves. Barriers were often mentioned in the vicinity of schools or dealing with children on their route to school. And another observation dealt generically with communication and employment to ensure that persons with disabilities, especially visual impairments, are able to effectively communicate and are considered for employment. Across the surveys and the virtual workshop, I developed a map that shows the locations of these identified barriers. And so the map does show that the majority of identified barriers are south of SR20 in the residential areas. And this makes sense when that's where the older infrastructure is located.
Okay.
I did another map that is trying to look at the public outreach responses as well as city planned projects. So Matt, you were talking about what is this TIP 50-foot buffer? That's for transportation improvement projects, TIP. And what we can see is that there is overlap between where the city plans to do transportation improvements and locations where the public identified barriers. The significance of this is that if the transportation improvement is of a certain type, it can trigger replacement of curb ramps or will involve replacement of sidewalks. So it's a way that the city can identify, oh, we are likely going to be able to address these barriers in a future year because we have a planned project there. So it's to be efficient in how barriers are removed.
Oh, very good.
If I may understand this right, if this is 50 feet, that means that if there's a barrier within 50 feet of this planned project, then we could address that barrier. That I'm trying to understand what the significance of 50 feet is. Do I understand that right?
Could you say that one more time?
I'm sorry. I'm trying to understand the significance of 50 feet.
50 feet. Oh, the significance. Okay. So we did 50 feet. So that means from like the center of the road, 50 feet on either side. And that is a safe number to capture from like the far end of a sidewalk to the other far end of a sidewalk. So it's 100 feet is a good width to try to capture where there would be barriers.
And so if there is a barrier within that 50-foot margin,
mm-hmm.
where you would propose the transportation improvement project, then it's likely that that barrier would be removed.
Yes, it is likely that the barrier would be removed if it's within that buffer.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah. David, could you, I don't know if you want to comment any more on that in terms of how 50 feet is a useful distance?
Well, I think you covered it. You're basically kind of covering within the right of way. Mm-hmm. Again, similar to what we just did on Jameson Street between 3rd and Township, where we did the overlay, we did add, replace, and improve 35 ramps through that corridor. Now, we know even through there, there is portions of sidewalk that are bad and, you know, can be mobility problems and other pedestrian problems, but you know, it's those are kind of outside the realm of what we can do with funding. Okay. So just because, you know, we have the corridor doesn't mean we can afford at this time to address all of the potential problems that are there. We're focusing at least now on the curb ramp portions. That's kind of our requirement. If we're in an intersection and doing work that impacts the traveled way, then we need to address curb ramps and accessibility for street crossing.
Okay.
I was having a hard time understanding what the 50 feet was measuring, but that now I understand what it means. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, David's description of the right-of-way is actually more accurate, since it is always what's in the state's or what is the city's responsibility, and that is within the right-of-way. Okay. So trying to digest the survey information, I tried to look for patterns in the data. So there was a question about the top priority barrier types. And what I noticed, given that SurveyMonkey had 23 responses and the ArcGIS survey only had 3, that we have to keep that in mind, that the SurveyMonkey is statistically more helpful. And what we noticed is the types of barriers that were at the top of the SurveyMonkey rankings were at the bottom of the smaller ArcGIS cohort.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why that might be? I was just curious about that.
One thing could be that if a person filling out the survey wasn't very comfortable with how to change the rankings, if it was more kind of like a user challenge to the survey for some reason,
that could be
one explanation, especially with only 3 responses in the ArcGIS survey type. But in terms of, you know, what to really... I think it's safer in this case to look at what SurveyMonkey is saying, that some top barrier types are fixed objects blocking the path of travel, overgrown vegetation in the path of travel, and sidewalk cracks or bumps. The top priority locations question, however, there was a lot of similarity between the two surveys. I'll point out the kind of lowest ranking locations first. Those were my residence actually came in as the lowest ranked place. And then parks and trails and local government buildings and post offices. Those ranked the lowest.
Mm-hmm.
And then the higher ranking locations, they're the same top 4, even though they're ranked differently within the top 4. And mm-hmm. those include grocery stores and retail shopping centers, also transit centers, stops and routes, also senior center and elderly care facilities, and schools and libraries.
Okay.
So those top four, they're the same top four, but they're ranked differently. So grocery stores was top on SurveyMonkey, but third for ArcGIS. But it was helpful to see, okay, we've got the same top four to consider.
Yeah. And, you know, this is Judy, and I know one of the things being on, you know, with the Skagit Transit Committee is that they are actually doing some changes for the better with the Cedar-Willie bus lines, where you're going to be able to actually go into Mount Vernon without all those stops in between. And we're needing some, of course, this is a Transit Skagit thing, we're needing, you know, some bus shelter upgrades and things like that. But, the, you know, to my mind, being a transit user, I'm glad to see it in the top four.
Okay. Are there any other observations from the other group members? Just kind of did anything surprise you, or does this kind of align with what you in your experience tend to see as a high priority?
Well, it just seems to me, you know, the rankings are where are people going most? What's their priorities? And it makes sense.
The top four are on each category are the top four that I would expect.
They're what you would expect, Matt?
Right, yes. I would not expect people to my personal preference is the top priority because I didn't know when to use it, so. I'm a little bit surprised that schools and libraries are the top that ArcGIS, but when you only have three responses, it's kind of hard to rely on that data.
Exactly. So that's where having to know that, okay, well, if we had to choose literally a top one through four, SurveyMonkey would be stronger to use that data than Survey 1, 2, 3.
And for me, my personal 1 through 4 would be exactly the same as SurveyMonkey.
Okay.
Agreed. Agreed on that. And I think the reason for that is something that you said, because you tend to get the more of the active and proactive responses through the SurveyMonkey. And that kind of surprised me too. I mean, I know for myself, SurveyMonkey is great to use, but I was like, wow, everybody else likes it too, you know? So that was kind of cool.
And ArcGIS is, it's familiar to people who use that tool, but it's not as what, it's very much niche. SurveyMonkey, most everyone has heard of it. So
yeah,
it could be just a level of comfort and familiarity. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Eric or Michelle, did you want to comment at all? I can go back to the types of barriers as well, if you wanted to look at those again.
No, it looked to me like it was, you know, what I had expected.
Okay. Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, the same here. I mean, it looks pretty typical for where I would have thought, so.
Okay. All right.
Well, the one thing I just want to say, because looking over these, you know, looking over the two other documents, you know, that you put together, They were just extremely thorough, extremely clear. And I'm like, wow, these are great. You know, these are, and user-friendly, you know, you could really go through them. I just thought they were, you did a great job on those.
Thank you. It's good for me to just think, you know, usually communicating data, if you do it a couple different ways, that helps to identify, you know, inconsistencies, but also to just, you know, people learn differently. So glad it was accessible. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think then to try to get some key takeaways at a higher level, I had spoken earlier about barriers identified were primarily south of SR20 in residential areas. And this does make sense with just the nature of older infrastructure and the fact that that older infrastructure is all also on roads used maybe at lower levels than SR20 with higher volumes, things like that. The narrative responses identified barriers in proximity to schools. I bring this up again because, you know, while the ranking did show, it showed, you know, grocery stores or transit, what people actually wrote, there was much more comments about schools. So that's something to consider. And then the state and township intersection barriers, those were identified in both surveys. And so I do think that state and township is, it may be the highest priority location because it was identified by all the public outreach platforms we used. Or at least that would be a recommendation we make in the plan, that state and township be high priority.
This is Michelle. Can I say something to that?
Mm-hmm.
So I walk a paper route with a gentleman who is low vision once a week, and we use that intersection because we go down from the senior center down State Street to, I don't know what it is, Greensleeves or whatever, and then up to Wicker and then back and then come down Ferry. And that is one of the hardest intersections for us to cross with him, because even though it's a four-way stop, not everyone mm-hmm. is looking for the pedestrians right there. Mm-hmm. And because it takes us a little longer to walk because he can't see to step down from the curbs,
mm-hmm.
it always makes it tough. And then walking that whole State Street, there's really no sidewalk. So we're on the street when we walk this paper route the entire way. And we're on the same with Wicker. When we come back Wicker, we're back on the street. And it's kind of a little nerve wracking with someone because, you know, there's three of us walking it with this one gentleman who just can't see. So his job. And then on that Ferry Street, on Ferry Street coming back into town, you know, he just tripped the other day on the sidewalk from some of the divots and stuff from the roots. The sidewalk's pushed up. So mm-hmm. yeah, that State Street one, definitely though, that intersection's pretty tough on us.
Okay.
Michelle?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Judy. I was going to ask this as you're talking. Would this gentleman be open to getting some good cane travel that would take all these obstacles out of his way? So he wouldn't have to be depending on failing vision so much.
Yeah, so unfortunately, he has other disabilities that prevent him from using that.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, we would be happy to, but he relies on us, unfortunately, to guide him through because of the other disabilities.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, Michelle, I've notated a confirmation of the state and township challenges, and that also you mentioned no sidewalk on portions of State and on Wicker Street. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, because we do that every Tuesday. We're walking. We walk from the senior center down State Street, down to, I think, what is that, Greensleeves or whatever it is that you can walk up to Dean and over to Wicker. And then we walk from there. And both those two main roads, Wicker and State, there's no sidewalk. And so we're walking on the road because it's just safer than walking on divvity grass.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah. The sidewalk on State Street kind of ends there. You get a little bit of a buffer at the church right. parking lot. Then you're on a dirt trail for a little while, and then nothing to the Green Street. So
yeah. And that dirt trail is usually covered by tree branches or bramble bushes or, you know, anything. So you just can't use it.
Right. Right.
Okay. I will notate these down as additional public feedback, since I do consider, you know, your responses as definitely useful feedback. So that I will add that into my public outreach documentation. So thank you, Michelle. That's helpful to identify further corridors.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I saw it was on the little blue buffer zone, that kind of area, but okay. That's definitely, because that's his weekly job. He does that, like I said, every Tuesday. So I just want to try to make that easy for him.
Absolutely.
So Michelle, if I could ask you, when you get to the Green Street, Dean and Virginia getting up to Wicker, is yeah. that easily traversable for
it you? Is. There's a couple of spots where the light utility poles kind of block the sidewalks with the bushes on the other side of the sidewalk. So we just walk around those, but that's pretty easy for him to walk through. The sidewalks are pretty smooth. I know that one section they just redid a couple of summers ago. So right. it's made it a lot easier to walk on that spot. And we don't usually have any areas of concern there. There's when you get onto Dean Street, there's no sidewalks, but there again, it's kind of not a very busy section. So that one's not as concerning as these busier roads that we're walking on.
Oh, okay. Okay. Just curious.
Yeah.
And Michelle, I also noted your Ferry Street tripping hazard, since that's a location or a corridor that Matt brought up at our workshop, that Ferry Street has definite tripping hazards.
Oh yeah, definitely. There, we had just crossed it last Tuesday. We went through there, and there was a spot where, you know, unfortunately with glasses fogged up with masks and stuff, I didn't catch it. And he actually tripped, was able to catch himself, but you know, it could have been pretty bad had somebody actually fallen right there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I will note that as well.
Thanks.
So I have a question regarding the proximity to schools. Mm-hmm. Is the school district responsible for access areas that are actually on school property? And if so, are any of these that have been targeted or brought up as issues on that property?
From the I can say from the feedback I got, it was general, saying in the vicinity of schools. So it would require city staff in researching the barriers in the vicinity of schools to see which ones, you know, I know our inventory of, or I know the city's inventory, so I can identify the ones that are in the vicinity of schools, but the city would only be able to address those. And yes, it would be the schools, if it's on school property, then it would be the school's responsibility. David, do you have any other further comment?
No, that's correct. And yeah, there are, I think around the high school, at least the Third Street side, over the years, we've been able to get that addressed fairly well. But the other central, Mary Purcell, just at a lot of those intersections, they do need work. There are ramps that need to be installed that aren't and should be there, and then others that need to be upgraded. But we do stay, again, within the right of way. You start getting up to the buildings and within the school grounds themselves, and that's the district's
mm-hmm.
responsibility.
Okay. I'm just making a note that that came up as a discussion point. Districts versus city jurisdiction. Okay. So in terms of the recommendations that I'll put in the draft plan that again will go out for any public comment later in 2021, what I will do is I'll be identifying that, you know, we have some top priority locations and we also had top priority barrier types that were identified to help guide selection of barriers that get removed as funding is made available.
Sounds good.
Okay. For building and building facilities and parks and trail evaluations, I wanted to just give a brief update of the facilities that have been evaluated. Those did occur in November. And so I can do, I'll share a list here. Can all of you see now a Word document map that I've, like a new screen share?
No.
No? Okay, I'm gonna stop sharing and reshare. Okay. So I'm sharing a map that has a list of the building facilities that were evaluated. And our architect evaluated City Hall, the fire station, the community center, the senior center, the existing city library at 802 Ball Street, the Cedro Woolley Museum, the Union Center public restrooms, the Union Cemetery rather, and then also the new library at 110 West State. The architect actually did meet with the current contractor on site and reviewed both the exterior and the interior to ensure that it is up to current ADA standards for new construction. So quite a few of the buildings were covered. The evaluations for those, it takes the architect a bit of time to put the reports together, but those reports will be part of an appendix to the plan. And so later, probably at our January or maybe our February meeting, those will be, I'll have more details to share about those. So we've got 8 locations that were evaluated.
Can you repeat that last location, please? What that is?
The last location was the site of the new library at 10 West State.
Gotcha.
Denver.
Thank you.
I'd be confused if the new library not completed yet. They reviewed the plans or they actually went in there before done with construction.
The new library is almost complete in its construction. And so at first the architect was only going to look at the exterior, you know, parking and accessible routes, but it was close enough to being finished that she was able to do a walkthrough on the inside and identified some problems with, you know, where fixtures were put in bathrooms, and the contractor will be fixing those as part of their current construction activities before it's made open to the public.
And nice that they would do that now instead of wait till it's completely done and then have to change it.
I think that the goal was to do it now so that while the last finishing touches are being put on it, that any barriers could be addressed now before it opens.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea rather than wait till you're open and then have to go back in.
Exactly. Yep. So it was good timing to do that. We are doing the plan now to align with that new site.
Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And as for parks, I'll find that list quickly. The parks map is a little bit less clear to read from a shared screen, but I'll point out the, I'll make it a little bigger here. We are covering a good number of parks. The parks that are kind of north of SR20, we're doing Bingham Park and Lions Park. The parks that are more kind of in the core, if you will, of the city, we have Metcalf Park and the Tesserick Ball Fields and Skate Park. We also did the Hammer Heritage Square, as well as the Harry Osborne Park and the Caboose. The other parks that were looked at were Winnie Hauser Park and Playfields, as well as Memorial Park, and also Riverfront Park, looking also at the areas around the Bark Park, the FEMA Wood Trail, and the parking near the baseball fields. So there are quite a few parks that were addressed as part of this plan. The map that's currently being shown does identify a lot of other park locations, but they either don't have they're undeveloped, or they weren't included in this scope because they don't have really public facing facilities, was my understanding. I think the majority of them are undeveloped. And again, there'll be more information come January and February for the outcome of these evaluations. All of these evaluations, they're based on four federal priorities for access. So there's like exterior access to approach the site. There's interior access routes. There's interior, or rather just kind of amenities that, you know, bathrooms, changing rooms, locker rooms. And then there's also amenities such as emergency services, if there's alarms or drinking fountains. So there's a federal basis for how these facilities are evaluated.
Okay.
Everybody can have what UGA means.
A question about what UGA means. Oh, here on this particular map showing, UGA stands for Urban Growth Area. That's the state. The state has areas that are set aside for where cities can plan to grow within. And so I included that to ensure that, you know, it's another way to look at where is growth anticipated,
right,
in a city.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, so back to our presentation. So a lot of inventory work was done this month by our architect. Any comments on that at the moment?
I had a comment. I don't know if this is the right time to say it or not. I reviewed the draft plan that you posted.
Mm-hmm.
And is it an appropriate time to comment on that or not?
Sure. That was the end of the bulk of the presentation tonight. So, yep, you're welcome to talk about those materials I sent out.
Okay. I appreciate you doing this. Every case I always know whatever it's for. I had to read it for about 15 minutes to figure out what the graph meant. And then I finally understood it. And that graph talks about the ArcGIS findings. And then below you give the Serving Monkey findings. And I believe with the ArcGIS findings, I think you mentioned 5 minutes set. Anyway, if it were me and it just me, I would probably present the Serving Monkey results in the same format as the ArcGIS results.
Oh, put the results in the same format?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to bring up the... so I can see what I sent out. I'm gonna reshare this.
Jennifer, this is Judy.
Yes.
I'm going to have to hop off the meeting, but I just didn't want to leave without saying anything. So
sure.
Anyway, I'll be back in touch.
Okay. And I'll chat with the group about scheduling for January.
Okay.
So the current meeting schedule you have, it would be 4:30 to 5:30 for your other commitment?
Yes, unfortunately. Okay. And this was something totally unforeseen until about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So, yeah. So if I can still participate, that would be wonderful. I mean, if people are agreed to another time. But if not, I totally understand. So... we'll be in touch.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, bye, Judy.
So Matt, thank you for bringing that point up that the data is displayed differently. The survey ArcGIS, I took the charts that the ArcGIS tool just created automatically, but I can recreate them to look the same as the SurveyMonkey if that's more helpful.
It would, or I think I think you missed a 5 minute set, and I believe that I was sure it's pushed into the other data. If you went back to the ArcGIS graph above, I see it in 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're missing 5 minute sets. I think the average score is in between the 5 minutes data.
So I'm missing score. I'm missing data.
I don't think you're missing data. I think it's smushed together. I think.
Oh, I see what he's saying. Yeah, on that one. If you look at column 4, then go to the right where those numbers, yeah, so right down there, see how those numbers look like they're kind of columns missing, because down the one below has got
five
total.
Maybe, oh, okay.
Maybe it's just the way it's displayed in that last one.
Okay. Yeah, I will check on that. Yeah, because you should have, you would think you'd have six. For six, if there were six questions, you'd have six. I'll look into that to make sure all the data, that I'm showing all the data.
And for me, I would show it the same way as you did for the survey bucket.
So it was more helpful to have a table like this?
Yeah, when I read that table, I had a lot less problems.
Okay.
So, and again, that's just my, when I read it, that was my finding of it. So not being critical, it's just what I would recommend.
No, it's just helpful because, you know, if I show the data in the same way, it's easier on the reader. They don't have to rethink how to interpret the data a second time.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I also tried to figure out how to use computer score. I used Excel to figure it out, but if they get a score, if they rate the top one at the most important, that gets a 7, and number 2 gets a 6 on the line. And you multiply that by the percentages, and I add up all the numbers to get the final score. And I figured out how you did that on my own.
Okay. Yeah, I depended on the SurveyMonkey's calculations. I did read their documentation, but these aren't my calculations. I did trust SurveyMonkey. So you said you came to the same, did you come to the same score? Oh,
okay. I didn't know they were SurveyMonkey. I thought you did that.
No, these were weighted scores from SurveyMonkey.
Right. Okay. And then I, being an accountant, I said, okay, how did they get that number?
Okay.
I figured it out myself, but. One thing that I just, when I read it, like, okay, how did they get that number 2.55?
Okay.
And then I figured it out on my own. I don't know if anybody else is going to really care or not.
Okay.
They were just me.
All right. I could add a paragraph about how I calculated, or how the figures are calculated.
Right. And I didn't figure it out on my own, if you want me to explain what I found.
How about I'll write up the paragraph and then send it, and if you think it works, then I could use it. So my goal is not to create unnecessary work for you, since I've been hired by the city to do this. So I can type it up and then just email you directly and see if it is clear and makes sense.
Okay.
Okay.
And maybe I'm the only one that cares how they got that score, but
I don't know, but it's always safer to be transparent about how numbers are created. Right. So I'm happy to add more information.
Okay.
Let's see. So yeah, this tech memo, this is, it's for the city to, you know, process the information in detail. How it looks in the final plan may be a little different, but I'll keep these observations in mind to try to make it as clear as possible.
Okay.
I'm just noticing that we're close to our 5 o'clock meeting time. In the tech memo, I'm going to put in our debrief conversation into it, so that's on record. And I think the other item I wanted to discuss was our next meetings going into 2021. Judy shared with me that she's been asked to chair the, I believe, Skagit County Accessibility Transit Advisory Committee, and their meetings have been moved to the second Tuesday of the month from 4:30 to 5:30. And so I wanted to, or she'd like to continue. However, if she were to continue, then she either would only be able to participate for the first, 20 or so minutes, or we as a group consider adjusting our timing. Are there preferences or comments for if we want to keep the 4 p.m. time slot, or if we want to adjust it so that Judy can participate fully?
Well, the 4 p.m. works for me. I would just look at Wednesdays. We have potential other meetings that can happen late in the afternoon.
Okay. Is 3:30 a possibility from the city side instead of 4 on Tuesdays, or is 4 p.m. really what works best?
Oh, yeah, 3:30 would work for, at least for me. Can't speak for Bill or Mark precisely.
But. Okay.
That works for me too, Jennifer.
Okay.
What about moving this advisory group meeting to the third Tuesday?
That's another option.
Because hers is just the second Tuesday. Because that's when we have our meeting, isn't it? Second Tuesday.
The goal was that we would be on the second Tuesdays of the month. And let me check her email to find out exactly what she said. She's been elected chair of the Skagit Transit Community Advisory Committee, and they are going to meet the second Tuesday of the month. The second Tuesday of the month, and it would be from 4:30 to 5:30. So if we were to reschedule our meetings, how about I could send out a survey to everyone that's asking, whether 3:30 to 4:30 on the second Tuesday works, or if 4 to 5 on a third Tuesday works.
I like the idea of the third Tuesday.
Okay. So Eric, you liked that. Others, does the third Tuesday
work? That would work for me.
Okay.
That works for me. There is a on the third Tuesday of each month, there's a planning commission meeting from 6:30 to about 7:30 or 8, but that shouldn't conflict.
Okay.
This is Michelle. That third Tuesday would work for me too.
Okay.
Well, there's your survey.
All right. Matt, would the third Tuesday work for you?
Yes, I prefer to change the date than meeting earlier.
Okay. All right. Well, I will send out a new series of, or I'll send out a calendar invite that changes it to the third Tuesday, and send that to all the members of this group and work from there. So that means the next meeting would be, get my calendar, would be Tuesday, January 19th.
And is that still at 4 p.m.?
4 to 5 p.m., correct.
Okay, great.
Well, that's easy. Yeah, meeting at the top of an hour is always easier to remember. So 4 p.m. on the third Tuesdays. I will send that invite out.
Thank you.
All right. Well, if there aren't any other or any other comments, otherwise we're done this week.
Oh, I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around what my is I roll at in this group to just give my input at the meeting, or do I have other expectation things that I'm supposed to do?
I think that what these meetings are doing so far is the intention, is that we want to share, you know, as we work through the plan, we want to share what we're finding and then just ask, like, what do you think of this? Because, you know, each of you have brought up something that's helpful, whether it's adding something new that we didn't know or confirming a problem like Michelle and you have done for some of the priority locations. So we consider you an integral part of, like for us, you are ongoing public engagement. So
thank you. I do make sure that I'm doing what people want me to do on the committee. Thank you for that.
Sure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So Jennifer, I did have it's a totally different topic that I was gonna ask you about, but I will, it's a little more involved than just, you know, asking a simple yes or no question. So okay. I will present it to you via email, and you can let me know if it's even relevant to this group.
Okay, sure, I'll look for that. Okay, well, thanks to everyone, and I will be in touch and hope you have a lovely holiday season, even though it's a little weird this year, and we'll look forward to meeting back up in the new year.
Thank you. All right, yeah, thank you.
Thank you,
Jennifer. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.